Good morning. Thank you for being here. My name is Vicki Rideout, and I'm a vice president of the Kaiser Family Foundation and the director of our program for the study of entertainment media and health. Today, we're releasing the results of our survey titled Parents, Children, and Media. This is the fifth survey in a series that we've conducted since 1998, where we track parents' concerns about media, their use of media rating systems, and other related issues. Right now, we're in the middle of a very active period when it comes to kids and media. The television industry is in the midst of the first really comprehensive and coordinated public education campaign on TV ratings and the V-chip. Meanwhile, several media companies have been hit with record-breaking fines on both indecency and educational content. The FCC recently issued a report to Congress calling for government limits on violent content on broadcast and cable television. And just a couple of weeks ago, the courts overturned an FCC ruling on so-called fleeting obscenities. So today, we're going to take a minute and look at where parents are in all of this. And then we're going to have a panel discussion about some of the implications of our findings and where we go from here. Let me start by taking just a minute to introduce our panelists to you. First, on my far right, Jim Dyke is executive director of TV Watch, an organization that represents the television industry's perspective on policy issues about media content and regulation, in particular promoting parental controls and individual choices as an alternative to increase government regulation of television content. He also heads his own communications consulting firm, Jim Dyke & Associates, and he served as communications director of the Republican National Committee, where he spearheaded a successful communication strategy that helped reelect President George W. Bush in 2004. Next, we have Mike Angus. He's executive vice president and general counsel of Fox Interactive Media, a company that includes the popular MySpace website, along with many other online entities, including Fox Sports and the popular video gaming site IGN. At Fox, he negotiates new business opportunities, coordinates privacy and safety activities, and oversees the day-to-day operations. And prior to joining Fox Interactive Media, he served as senior vice president at Fox Cable Networks Group. So we're happy to have you with us, Mike. Thank you for being here. Dr. Vic Strasburger is a pediatrician and the author of numerous books and articles on children and media. He's currently chief of the Division of Adolescent Medicine, a professor of pediatrics and professor of family and community medicine at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine in Albuquerque. He has authored more than 120 articles and papers and 8 books on the subject of adolescent medicine, including the effects of television and other media on children and adolescents. And he's also the author of the American Academy of Pediatrics' recent policy statement on children and advertising. And finally, Tim Winter is executive director of the Parents Television Council, a media watchdog group that provides information on media content to parents and advocates for curbs on sex and violence in the media. Prior to joining the PTC, Mr. Winter spent 15 years in various management positions at the NBC television network, working on network broadcast operations, program production, international and domestic cable, and the creation of MSNBC. And prior to joining NBC, Mr. Winter worked at MGM, where he led the legendary movie studio's interactive division and its online and video game publishing venture. So he has a broad array of experience in the media world. Thank you all for being with us here today. For the report that we're releasing here today, we conducted a nationally representative survey of more than 1,000 parents of children ages 2 to 18. We also conducted a series of focus groups with parents of children ages 9 to 14, so the tweens, in various cities across the country. And at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to briefly run through some of the key findings just from the survey with you, and then a little bit later, we'll take a look at some of the focus groups. The first finding that I wanted to share with you is that a large proportion of parents continue to be very concerned about the issue of inappropriate content in the media. 2/3 of parents say they are very concerned that children in this country are exposed to too much inappropriate content. And that's a number that has not changed since our last survey in 2004. So this is still a very salient issue for many parents. One thing that was interesting to us is that we did find some significant differences in the level of parental concern based on race. African American and Latino parents are more likely to be concerned about children's exposure to inappropriate content than white parents are. So, for example, 67% of African Americans say they're very concerned that children are being exposed to too much sexual content compared to 45% of white parents. And the comparable figures are 64% very concerned about violence compared to 39% of whites, and 60% very concerned about coarse language compared to 34% of white parents, with Hispanic parents falling in between in each case. Indeed, parents are convinced that media messages do influence the behavior of children, specifically that sex in the media contributes to young people becoming involved in sexual situations before they're ready. 55% say it contributes a lot. And that violence in the media contributes to aggressive behavior. 43% say they think it contributes a lot. Interestingly, even in this internet era, when we ask parents which medium concerns them the most, parents still say TV more than any other medium, including video games, music, or the internet. In fact, 2/3 of parents support government regulation of television content during the early evening hours. Again, this is a number that has not changed since our last survey in 2004, and I think it reflects parents' strong concerns about the broader media environment that their kids are growing up in. However, when it comes to their own kids, many parents are feeling a little bit better than they've felt over the past 10 years. When we ask parents how concerned they are that their own children are being exposed to too much sex violence or adult language in the media that their kids use, it's still a pretty high level of concern, 40 to 50%, but it is clearly down noticeably since we first began surveying on this issue in 1998. Now, why are parents' concerns about their own children's exposure to such content going down? We can't know for sure, but it may be because they feel like when it comes to what happens in their own homes, they're doing a pretty good job of monitoring their children's media use. 2/3 of parents say they closely monitor their children's media use, and only 18% say they think they need to do more. Surprisingly, this is even true when it comes to the internet. In fact, it's even a little bit more true. Almost 3 out of 4 parents whose kids use the internet say they know a lot about what their kids are doing online. And this, frankly, pretty much flies in the face of what we expected to find in this survey, because we have this perception of parents as feeling overwhelmed, a little bit behind the curve when it comes to their kids' technological expertise and trying to keep up with them. But in fact, most parents feel pretty on top of their kids' internet use. In fact, pretty large majorities say they do things like review the names on their children's instant messaging buddy lists, check their children's profiles on social networking sites like MySpace, check where they've gone online, and so on. Now, there are lots of other ways for parents to monitor their children's media use, both online and offline. One way is for them to use the various media ratings and parental advisory systems that are out there for them. And as you can see here, about half of parents say they use the ratings or advisories for TV, video games, and music, and close to 80% use them for the movie ratings. Use of the music advisories has gone up since we first began surveying on this subject in 1998, and use of the movie ratings has gone down. But for TV and video games, it really has not changed hardly at all since 1998. Where there has been a little bit of change is in parents' attitudes towards these tools. Among those parents who have used each system, the proportion who say they find them, quote, very useful, has increased over the years, at least for video game, TV ratings, video games, and music advisories, with the TV ratings, you can see, still come in last in the percent of parents who say they find them very useful compared to the other advisories. But in all three of those cases, the proportion who find them very useful has increased. This may indicate that parents are becoming a little more adept at using these ratings and advisory systems. Now, one reason that the TV ratings may not get more use or more rave reviews from parents is because a lot of parents still do not understand what the ratings mean. And unfortunately, as you can see from this chart, we've had virtually no movement on that since our last survey in 2004. The one exception to that is a little bit of an increase in the awareness of the TV-14 rating. The TV-MA rating, I should say, awareness has increased a little bit since 1998, but not since 2004. So as you can see here, almost no parents know what the content rating D means, which stands for suggestive dialogue, or EI, which stands for educational and informational programming. Only a third know that the S rating denotes sexual content, and only half know that the V stands for violent content. The age-based ratings fare a little bit better, with half knowing that TVMA means for mature audiences and 61% knowing that TV-14 means appropriate for ages 14 or older. As you know, the TV ratings are designed to work in conjunction with the VCHIP, so that if parents choose to, they can actually block shows with certain ratings from coming into their sets. The VCHIP has been required to be in all new TV sets over 13 inches, sold since January of 2000. And one thing that we have looked at in these surveys is simply tracking how many homes actually have a VCHIP-equipped television. And we find that today, more than 80% of parents do have a VCHIP-equipped TV in their home. That is, they've purchased a new TV since the requirement that new TVs include a VCHIP went into effect. But a majority of those who have a VCHIP still don't seem to be aware of it. 43% do know, and 57% don't know that they have one. Among those who do have a VCHIP and know they have a VCHIP, close to half, 46%, say they have used it. Now, that may sound pretty good. But if you look at that from the basis of the total population of parents, factoring in all those who either don't have a VCHIP still or don't know they have one, it's still very few parents, just 16%, who say that they've ever tried the VCHIP. This is virtually unchanged since 2004. Those who have tried it really like it. More than 70% say they found it very useful. So those who are trying it like it, but not many are trying it, perhaps because they don't even know that they have it. Finally, turning to another topic, we also asked parents about a variety of issues about the effect of media on children and youth, and I want to share those results with you now. This will cover what parents believe about a lot of the things that have been said in the news about kids and media. For example, media and obesity. We found that two-thirds of parents do believe that children who spend a lot of time watching TV are more likely to be overweight, with 20% saying that's not true and 13% saying they don't know. On a more positive note, a majority of parents are also convinced that educational TV has real benefits for kids, with 59% saying that kids who watch a lot of educational TV have better verbal skills, but a somewhat higher proportion, 23%, saying they're not really sure one way or the other. Remember that when it comes to obesity, only 13% said they didn't know. So the opinions were a little more firm there. The percent of parents who aren't sure goes up even more when we ask about the effect of baby videos on early childhood development. It's still a pretty large proportion, nearly half, who say that baby videos have a positive effect on early childhood development. And only 17% who say they don't. But this time, 35% say they're really not sure one way or the other. And finally, another controversial issue in the news has been the link, if any, between TV and attention deficit disorder in children. And we found that in this case, parents really are not convinced of media's effect. Just 26% say it does have an effect, while 41% say it doesn't, and 33% say they aren't sure. Now, in order to get at some of the nuances that a national survey can't really uncover, we also conducted a series of focus groups honing in on the parents of tweens, kids in the 9 to 14-year-old age range. We held a total of 8 focus groups in Irvine, California, Dallas, Texas, Chicago, Illinois, and Washington, D.C. Here in D.C., we had the chance to videotape 2 focus groups, and I want to thank Jackie Judd and Sean Weiland and Hillary Carrere for their help with that, and thank the Foundation's Liz Hamill from our Survey Research Department for the excellent job she did moderating the sessions, and Teresa Boston for her help in organizing the groups and the entire project, including this event. We've put together a short tape of some of the parents' comments from the D.C. focus group that seem to echo the thoughts of parents around the country. Let's take a quick look.
So overall, do you think that media has an influence on your kids' attitudes and behaviors?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's agreeing to that?
My daughter's one of those kids that could be consumed with it if I let her be.
Overall, I've noticed with my son, when it comes to his core values, he still refers to his father, thankfully.
The media affects their peers, too, and then they're influenced by their peers. So it's a
ripple effect.
Yeah, it is a ripple effect.
And video games is a humongous part of his life. Yes. I mean, let alone rush through his homework, and he's ready to go to that video game, but he'll put the video game on and the music, so he wants both.
What are some of the ways that media is good for your kids?
Yes, definitely with the history and the way things were. My children are amazed when they see shows even like in the 60s or 70s and mm-hmm. things about specifically discrimination and race. It brings up a discussion.
Like when my son, I told you, he likes to watch the food shows because at first he wanted to be this basketball player. I don't know where he got that idea from, but now he wants to be a chef.
Yeah.
And that's realistic in my mind.
My daughter was watching some show, one of those, I think the Sweetlight was Zach and Cody, and they were having a fitness, I think, all thing about fitness, and she came back and she said, oh, I found out all these exercises, and I want to start doing these, you know. Mm-hmm. So things like that can, you know, have positive, mm-hmm. positive effects.
Do you think that your own kids come across inappropriate content in the media?
Oh, sure. Yes.
A lot?
Yes. Yeah.
Sometimes I'm astounded. I think, oh, my God, it's 7:30 mm-hmm. in the evening, and, you know, you flip it on, and, you know, somebody's in bed or somebody's talking about who they were in bed with.
Oftentimes you'll be watching a fabulous family-oriented show, and then a commercial for Viagra comes on. What do you think are the main messages about sex that your kids are getting from media?
Anything goes.
Mm-hmm. Anything that feels good.
Casual.
Yep. So one at a time, anything goes.
Anything that feels good.
Early and often.
Early and often.
Casual.
You know, it's not. No commitment.
I think that children who aren't being supervised are getting a whole lot of education out there on regular TV. Mm-hmm. I mean, not, you know, pay channels, but just regular old stuff. So do you feel like the stuff that your kids watch is mostly, you mostly like it? You think there's good choices?
Yeah, in general, I think, you know, we use parental guidance to try the best we can to monitor what they watch and lock certain shows that we know or we don't feel like are okay.
I don't let him watch anything, but like she said, you can put locks on the TVs now. I let him watch, he's 11, but I let him watch shows that's like TV 14.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be something, a movie or something that's going to come on and he want to watch. And he'd be like, Mom, can you fix my TV? You got to put a code in the unblock it.
Right.
And he'd be like, well, I want to watch such and such. I'd be like, well, what is it rated? Like, I think it's rated R. And so I'll go, I think you can watch that. And there was a point where I tried to use the feed chip or the control on the TV, and it got actually annoying because everything he wanted to watch, I had to put in a code for. And every half an hour when a show changed, it would be setting the code again.
Mm-hmm.
So we gave up on that. And just said, here's your list of what you can watch. If I catch watching something else, then, you know, we're going to have to discuss it and figure out if it's going to be appropriate or not.
So how do you feel about the video games that your kids are playing?
One of the ones that my son plays, I think it's called Vice City. And I could be wrong on that, but that one's very violent.
Mm-hmm.
It has people shooting, actually has flippers on it. And to get points, you have to beat them up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bad. It's an embarrassment that he plays that, but the other kids have it. And
I feel good about the ones that he's playing, but again, what he's playing is not necessarily what his good friends might be playing. And so it concerns me.
I think it's good those games are rated. You know,
yeah, that's nice. Like the E for everyone or whatever, so it's nice that...
And you find those ratings helpful?
They give you a rating, but they also will tell you exactly
why.
You may see blood in this or, you know, they will tell you.
Oh, that's helpful. What about music? Are your kids into music at this age?
Oh, yes.
Somewhat. Somewhat. Yes. Most people are nodding.
Yes. Yeah.
I had an interesting experience because apparently, depending on where you buy it at,
right. Mm-hmm.
It's a very different version.
Right.
And unfortunately, one was purchased at the wrong store, and it was Akon with Snoop Dogg. You know,
oh,
and
oh my
it
God.
Was the whole thing. It was very, very explicit, and I was like,
I have to be very selective because even with the radio version, the clean version, it's still a little, you know, risky. Wow.
And how do you go through that process of being selective? How do you...
She wants to buy a CD of any shape or size. We make her research the lyrics and print them out and present them to us before she's allowed to buy it.
He doesn't buy CDs. He has an iPod, so he can't get on iTunes without us getting on it and seeing what songs he's downloading.
In my opinion, it doesn't come close to what they can step into on the internet in terms of violence, pornography, violent pornography, all of it.
We have a filter on our computer that has been invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter has accidentally pulled up horrible sites that were just, you know, she was just wanted to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And so we immediately got that.
My husband does all that stuff and he's got it. He said, anything you even think about looking, we know what you're going to get. We'll get an email that he tried to go here, tried to go there.
How many have a MySpace page? Your child has a MySpace page, so about half. Do you look at their profiles on MySpace?
I just found out maybe about 2 weeks ago my son had a MySpace page that his brother set up for him and told the people that he was 17. So my sister, she's all that computer stuff. She went in and shut it down.
I made sure my daughter didn't reveal too much information. I had to help her take information off because she had Silver Spring, Maryland. I was like, that's too specific.
I don't worry so much about the cyber predators as I do the cyber bullying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff is put up
that's
inappropriate or, you know, pictures are taken. That's a very innocent picture and is turned into something.
That's what they did to her. I actually trust my daughter, you know, and I let her do things on her own, and I don't stand over her shoulder. And I'm hoping that I'm making a good judgment on that.
And sometimes you just have to pick your battles, you know.
Yes.
If you're coming home after working 10-hour day or something like that, if he wants to watch an extra 30 minutes of TV, as long as he's sitting somewhere, the homework is done, and, you know, he's safe and he's happy, whatever, I'll even go in there and veg out in front of the television with him. You just have to pick your battles.
Part of it is laziness. I mean, as far as a parent, you know, if I've had a really stressed day and I've got a million things to do, I might not be as vigilant watching what they're watching on TV because I'm doing three other things. Sometimes you slide, and then they get away with sometimes you.
I think you control or hopefully control what's going on with your own child. But part of the problem to me of everything that's out there, the access, it's so different than when I was a child. And so maybe he's not watching a show or maybe he's not playing a violent video game or listening to certain music. But maybe his friend on the bus is listening to that song. He's like, oh, here, you know, listen to this. Or he's at someone's house and they say, oh, let's play this for a while. I think there's just so much more exposure, even if you try to control it.
Okay. In summary, I guess what I would say is that while parents are still concerned about the broader media environment that they're raising their kids in, especially African-American and Hispanic parents, most of them feel like they're managing to cobble together the tools they need to do a pretty good job of monitoring the media their own children are exposed to, at least while they're at home. They think their kids' media use is an important issue. They believe that media has a real effect on their kids. A lot of them are using the tools that the industry has made available to them, like ratings and advisories, and they appreciate those tools a lot. But they also feel like, especially at least when it comes to television, that they'd like to see a little greater support from the industry, particularly through more limits on sex and violence in programming shown during the early evening hours, even if it takes government regulations to get us there. With that, I'm going to turn it over to the panelists to get their opinions and perspectives on our findings. It's my pleasure to introduce our moderator for today's panel session. Jackie Judd is a former ABC News correspondent who has covered many very important national and international networks for the issues for that network, and she's now a vice president of the Kaiser Family Foundation. So please join me in welcoming Jackie Judd.
Thank you. Thanks, and good morning, everyone. Tim Winter from the Parents Television Council, I want to start with you. I think the survey has this fascinating finding that, in a global sense, parents remain very concerned about media exposure. But when it comes to their own individual children, they have a different view. Their concern has declined over the years, as Vicky pointed out. What do you make of that?
Well, Jackie, I don't know that I agree with you.
Okay.
And first of all, I want to commend Vicky and your team for another superb study. I think that a couple questions really jumped out at me in the data here. One was, as you just suggested, the societal concern. There is a societal concern when they talk about children in this country are being exposed to too much. 93% said either very concerned or somewhat concerned. But the fact that parents are somewhat less concerned than they were a few years ago, I guess they can say that perhaps the sex and violence in the media sucks a little bit less than it used to, is not a solution in my view. When you look at question number 25, how concerned are you that your children are being exposed to too much? You're somewhere between 75 and 80% of either somewhat concerned or very concerned that their child, in spite of everything they're trying to do, in spite of all the efforts they're trying to make to protect their children, they're still 75 to 80% concerned, somewhat or very, to the point that two-thirds of parents say, we think we should have more regulation. I think that's really unfortunate.
But still, when you step back from the individual questions and you look at the more general findings and parents' concern about their own children has declined, do you think, to a degree, parents are fooling themselves?
I think that I thought the video clips were very telling. I think the focus group comments we just saw are very telling. I think that is the sentiment of the nation, is that parents truly are upset. I don't think, are they fooling themselves in that they think they're doing a better job than they are? Perhaps, and I think that, Vicky, your study from 2 years ago, where they asked similar questions to children in the 2005 study, showed that the children have a slightly different view of what they're able to get away with.
Right.
But I think that that's a sign of the times, where you have children who are growing up knowing how to use more technology better than their parents. They are able to find certain ways around certain things to go, and they can go over to Billy's house and see stuff that they can't in their own house. But again,
and that was certainly the view of some of the parents we heard in the
focus
group. But
the theme here, the data, is I think, extraordinary in its demonstration that Americans, parents especially, are concerned, very concerned. And this echoes data that we've done, polling we've done nationally, not just parents, but all Americans.
Vic, did you want to jump in on this?
Yeah, Jackie, I think you're right. Parents are fooling themselves, and they're doing it for a good reason, which is called the third-person effect, which we know about from communications research. And the third-person effect says everyone thinks the media affects everyone else but themselves, and it is well-documented. We've known about it for many years. People sitting in this audience think, hey, you know, it's those dumb bozos out there who are being affected by sex and drugs and violence on TV. It's not us. We're smarter. All of us think that way, adults, and I think children do too. And parents, of course, if you ask parents, are you doing a good job in regulating media that your kids see, they're going to say yes. It's like, you know, asking a politician, have you ever beaten your wife? What are you going to say? Not yes, no. Two-thirds say they closely monitor what their kids watch, and yet two-thirds of teenagers have a TV set in their bedroom, according to Kaiser's work, which, by the way, I agree completely with Tim. Kaiser is virtually the only foundation that is doing TV research. It does a wonderful job, and they are really to be commended. And I wish more foundations and more government agencies got into the act. Parents think they're controlling the media. The kids say they're not. If you have a TV set in your bedroom, you're not controlling the media. And two-thirds of teenagers, one-half of grade school kids, one-third of small children have a TV set in their bedroom. So I think parents would like to think they're controlling the media, but they're not. I am a so-called media expert. I can tell you I'm one of that 18% who feels I'm not doing a very good job. So what does that tell you?
Mike Angus, as Vicky pointed out before, you went into new media, as we old folks call the web. You were on the TV side. And I'm wondering what your take is about why parents, to a larger degree, aren't using the tools that have been out there for quite a while now, the TV ratings Vicky described, the V-chip, et cetera.
Well, one of the things that I take from the study, and it's a bit of a different approach, but I think concern is a good thing. I think it's good that parents are concerned, and I can take that concern and reconcile it with them feeling like they're doing a good job. I think we should all, as parents, be concerned about what our children are exposed to and take that opportunity to learn more about what they're being exposed to and to become more involved and engaged and to talk to them about all those issues that they're being confronted with, whether it's on television, on the internet, at school, or anywhere during their day.
But part of that concern, and I'll move to Jim Dyke now, is on the part of parents, is that the television networks may not be policing themselves well enough. And so, as we saw, a majority support the idea of some government regulation. Have you concerned?
Well, a couple of thoughts, and I agree with Mike. I think concern is a healthy thing. And if you put some of this in context, there's 110 million television households. 35 million of them have children in them. Not all programming is intended for children.
Right.
Parents ought to be aware of that, and they ought to be concerned that their children are seeing. You know, sometimes this debate, it gets a little lost to me. It seems to me the question is, what is the best approach to ensure that children don't see programming that's inappropriate for them? So in that context, it also seems to me that for too long we've had sort of a public policy debate that's sort of been ruled by mob rather than reason and thoughtful consideration to solutions. Is it possible today to say that the tools don't work, that they failed, and that we need government based on the following? Overwhelmingly, 65% of parents monitor their children's media use.
Or say they do.
Say they do?
Think they do.
Think they do. I mean, if part of the what we're going to do with the survey is sort of say we don't think these questions are accurate, then that's okay, but I think there's some other points. They don't think their own children are exposed to a lot of inappropriate content. Parents think they have a lot more influence over the kids than the media does. They have increased awareness of ratings, 81%, and V-chip, 70%. Nearly 3 out of 4, 71% of parents who have tried the V-chip say they find it very useful, a higher proportion than any of the media ratings or advisory systems. So It may not be a perfect system, certainly, but parents who use it like it. And to be out there saying that it's broken, it doesn't work, it's useless, and government has to step in and take action, I think is a mistake.
I feel like we have a little bit of a Rorschach test going here. Everybody is reading this survey in some different ways. Tim Winter, what's your take, though, on something we've been talking about so far, and that is the challenge of parents getting comfortable and more frequently using the tools that now exist, as opposed to government regulation?
I think that any tool, any resource that helps a parent be a better parent is a good thing. In my home, we have V-chip. I use the V-chip on television sets. I use channel blocking devices on my cable set-top box. I have a TiVo in my daughter's bedroom, which is programmed with what's called KidZone, which is one of the, I think, the best solutions in terms of if you're going to have a TV set with your child that filters out just about everything except for that which you specifically want in. all that put together still has me gripped with fear for what is, again, talking to the social scientists, I've never had a single conversation with anyone who's either a specialist in the field or anyone who even just is a child or family psychologist in their own private practice who isn't abundantly concerned with what the impact is on children, even in spite of all these efforts. I think that for anyone to look at the results of this study and say, we've done our job, I think we have a good situation here, I think it's fooling themselves.
Tim?
Can I just say a couple of things? For one, I'm surprised to hear Tim say that you use these tools. I read repeatedly that the PTC believes that the tools are a failure and that they don't work and that we need government to step in and save the day. So I think it is a good thing that you're saying today. That
when did I say government should step in and save the day?
That these tools
when?
Do work.
Have we ever said that?
You repeatedly call on the government to pass regulation.
Name one.
To increase regulation.
Name one.
Of media content.
Name one.
So.
Okay.
But just to finish my point. So it is good news that the tools do work and they are a solution because they are. And
but parents in this survey are suggesting it may not be enough of a solution if such a large number are still looking at government regulation.
Well, I think two things to that. And I saw that that the government number was during the early evening hour was the question.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think it's important to, and something TV Watch has done fairly in-depth, and we'll be having a new poll that comes out next week that even dives in deeper, is to really present people with the choices. Mm-hmm. I mean, for starters, I would say why early, just early evening? Why not in the morning? My daughter watches television in the morning. Why not Oprah in the afternoon? That had some pretty graphic stuff on it. So why does the question limit it to that? And then what are the choices? I would have liked to seen in today's Kaiser report, I noticed that there was a reference to the PTC violence study, something that I found to be extremely subjective in its conclusions. And I would have liked to see some of the polling results that we've had from our previous polls. 92% of Americans agree that while they don't always like the content of programs they and their families watch, I'd rather make that decision for myself than have the government make the decision for me. So we have a fairly strong body of polling that lays out some pretty clear choices, and people seem to take a different approach.
Vicki, do you want to get in?
Yeah, a couple things. Well, first of all, on the difference between the results that we get between TV Watch and the Kaiser Family Foundation on the issue of whether parents support the legislation and the regulation, I think, with all due respect, I'd pit my question wording against yours for objectivity. I invite people to compare the two questions. But I guess I was thinking about playing devil's advocate with you, Jim, just for a second. So as I read, for example, the FCC's report to Congress on violence and why they would argue the TV ratings and the VCHIP have failed, and I'd put it to you to kind of to counter that point of view. I think what they would say if they looked at this is, okay, only 16% of parents all these years later use the VCHIP. It hasn't budged at all. There's been no increase in the use of the TV ratings and no change in understanding of the TV ratings, even after the industry's public education campaign has been underway. So therefore, and again, I'm just arguing devil's advocate from their perspective, they might say, therefore, we think that these tools don't work.
Sure.
How would you respond to me?
And if I could just do two things, because your point to the polling is fair, and that's why we did another poll and really dove into it more. So if I can just sort of brush that back a little bit, this is a poll. This is a question from a poll we'll be releasing next week, and it's an agree or disagree. And we tried to make it easy for people to agree, which is, Victor pointed out, is what people typically do. The current parental controls and rating systems have failed. It's time for the government to step in and do more. Disagree, 60%. Agree, 35%. So, again, I think that if you really want to get into how people feel about what the government ought to be doing, you need to really dive into the questions some more.
Well, if I could, I think what our survey shows is a little more nuanced. Give parents credit for a little more nuanced view. They don't think this is the current ratings have failed. They appreciate them. Plenty of them use them. At the same time, the reality seems to be they still support, think that the industry should do a little more. That's how I read those findings.
In the early evening hour, which is what the question
Yes.
said. I mean, I'm just reading the question. But to your second point about what the FCC would say and why they might say that the ratings or the tools don't work, certainly that can be their opinion. Based on the polling, I mean, there's also a larger context with people how people control their media. We sort of dismissed earlier the fact that parents are monitoring their media. Well, they're also using DVRs, DVDs, other technologies. So I think just because people aren't using the available technologies does not mean that the system's a failure. Certainly, we have to do more to educate parents so that they know that they have these tools.
Vic, do you believe that the tools need to change, and if so, how?
Absolutely. I think part of the problem is whose government is going to step in. If you ask the current government to step in, I'd say no thank you. If we ask a future government to step in, Al Gore, for example, was a very key influence on developing the TV ratings in the first place. And they did not go as far as he wanted them to go. The American Academy of Pediatrics, I specifically was involved with those ratings. They did not go as far as we wanted them to go either. The ratings systems are a mess. They are a mess. The TV ratings are voluntary. The video game ratings are voluntary. The movie ratings are done in high secrecy. If any of you have seen the recent movie on that, this film is rated NC-17. It's a wonderful movie. We need a universal rating system, and the American Academy of Pediatrics has come out strongly in favor of that, as have a number of studies and academics. Parents really want a universal rating system. You could say that's government regulation to insist that we have that. Would that be so awful?
Jim?
If you want to have a conference on ratings, let's do it.
Mike?
But to me, that's not the debate that's taking place right now. The debate that's taking place, and by the way, Victor, I think you make my point very well, the subjective nature of government. You may have a lot of confidence in a future government. I don't. I'm not certain what it'll be. I have confidence in educating parents because I don't think government can do this job, even if we get to a place where they're empowered to do it.
Underlying our conversation this morning, of course, has been this question of what is the responsibility of media in terms of doling out, I'm not quite sure what the right phrase is, sex and violence in any kind of media. Mike, what's your view of what the responsibility is?
The responsibility of media in doling out the sex and violence, I think it's, I would phrase the question a bit differently and look at it as what do we need to
do? You're not the first person to say that this morning.
I look at what tools are we providing to the parents. And, you know, it's everyone has talked about the V-chip failures. And one of the things that I take away again from the study is that I'm encouraged by what our efforts on the MySpace site have been to empower parents and to educate them about what tools are available for them on the internet and to engage and participate in their kids' online lives. So I think that providing them with additional tools to do that and to be more astute about what's going on, we're releasing in connection with the next school year parental software tool called, for now, Zephyr. And Zephyr will allow parents to install it on their computers and know whether or not their children are using MySpace, and if so, what their account name is and what age they're representing themselves to be. One of the mothers from the study had said that she found out that her son set up an account through through a relative and misrepresented himself as 17. This software tool would allow parents to see that automatically and to know, for example, if they do go to Billy's house and to log in to their account and then subsequently change their age. So that's something that the tool is going to allow parents to do. And again, it will foster the dialogue, which we feel is the most important aspect of online safety is to have the kids talking to their parents about it.
When you were developing this new software, what considerations were in play to make it easy for parents to use?
We had a number of focus groups on our own to reach out to parents and find out what it is they want and need. There are plenty of software tools out there. I think a number of the folks from the study use them to allow them to very closely monitor everything that's going on a computer, for example, what sites they're going to. You can get into even more depth and read messages. This was something that is designed to be very simple, very clean, and also to allow other sites to participate. So if Yahoo chooses to join into this endeavor, they can add instant messaging, and you can find out what instant message services your child is using. So it's very simple. It is very easy to use, and it's designed in an open way so that other services can participate.
I'm wondering,
and it's going to be made available free.
I'm wondering if there's anything for the traditional TV industry to learn from what's happening on your front. Anybody want to take that?
I think overall the industry, the entertainment industry, if it simply realized that it has a public health duty. I mean, you know, way back when in 1932, the public owns the airwaves and they are leased back to the networks to produce programming in the public's best interest. That's the FCC Act that established television in the United States. Are the networks doing that? Are they doing that? I think they need to recognize they have a public health responsibility. Hollywood needs to recognize that. The amount of smoking in movies has gotten completely out of control, and it's a powerful influence on teenagers. If Hollywood would understand, and the networks, that media work as a kind of super peer. We all acknowledge the influence of peers on kids. The media are a super peer. I think if they did that, we wouldn't be talking about government regulation as much. I think when you go to Hollywood and you say, look, we've got some concerns. There's too much smoking in the movies, too much violence. They go, First Amendment, don't come near us. And nobody's talking about censorship here. The American Academy of Pediatrics has always been strongly against censorship. We're not talking about regulating, you know, media down to the nth degree. We're talking about common sense.
But everybody's common sense is different. Tim?
I would like to commend Mike for the efforts that they're taking on MySpace and for the online protections they're trying to put in place. I think that anytime we're talking about television and the Internet today, I mean, it's an ever-shifting landscape. We see announcements every day in the newspapers about more and more television content going to the web. We're not far away from the point where, like TiVo and Apple and so forth, are doing so that you go out and get whatever you want anytime you want. You get it through your broadband connection. You throw it over onto your screen in your living room, and you watch it whenever you want to.
It's on cell phones now, too.
Exactly. So we are headed in that direction, and clearly the courts have said there is a different legal standard in terms of any sort of government involvement, Internet versus public airwaves. So I commend the efforts being taken, and I only wished that there were more efforts on the broadcast side. When the V-chip was first discussed, when it was first mm-hmm. proposed, the industry barfed. I mean, I remember working at NBC when it happened, and they were decrying the V-chip as censorship. And now here, lo and behold, it's the holy grail of protection. The industry found a way, and again, I spent most of my career in the industry. I'm still new in this public policy thing. I've been doing it for 4 years now. I spent my whole career in the industry. And these are my friends. I love them with every fiber of my being. But what they did was, not my friends, of course, what they did was they found a way to use what was a threat as a Trojan horse. Hey, we warned you. Hey, we have the V-chip out there. You have the power to block it, but we're just going to keep sending it out there. They found ways, you know, the PTC analysis of the rating system, we found that the descriptors, the D, L, S, and V, which most people can't identify, or at least, I guess, half could identify some of them, we found them to be missing between 70 and 80% of the time. And if they are rating their own programs, if the networks are rating their own programs, the fox's guarding the hen house there, no pun intended. If the ratings are wrong, the VCHIP can't work. We've had a number of conversations about that. There has to be a more objective standard. There has to be a uniform standard so that people understand the difference between TV 14 and television and PG 13 in the movies. And most parents, when you actually look at the list of words used in a PG 13 movie today, parents of a 13-year-old child, if they saw those lists, I think they would say, well, this isn't really for a 13-year-old.
Vicki.
Yeah, I wanted to actually ask Tim, I mean, we were talking before about what PTC does or doesn't support in terms of solutions or policy recommendations, and so I was going to ask you to elaborate on what your position has been on that. And in particular with the ratings, I've read your reports about the failures of the rating system. Is there anything, any changes that could be made to the ratings that you think might help, you know, make them satisfactory to you? Like, for example, if there was an independent board that assigned the ratings, or if there were some kind of uniform standards across networks as to what would get a TV 14 or what would get a V or an S, would you support them?
Hey, I'll go back to what I said in the first comment when I spoke here earlier. Any resource, any tool that is trustworthy, that is real, that is accurate, is a good resource for parents. When I go through the supermarket, I can look at the box of Wheaties to see what the ingredients are. And I can find, like most people, I can find that helpful. But if it's wrong, how helpful is it? If the ratings are wrong, how helpful are the ratings? I had dinner several weeks ago with some TV network executives who are responsible for broadcast standards, broadcast controls. And in listening to them talk about their earnestness, is that a word? How earnest they are in their efforts. How there is this Chinese wall about between programming and how the programmers hate the standards people because the standards are always saying no. And I suggested, well, perhaps you should not have standards inside the company at all. You should, you know, outsource it and have an objective rating system. Oh, no. You know, it's because they don't want to lose the control.
Tim, do you want to jump in on that?
A lot of subjective decisions going on. You know, I looked at the PTC study and I didn't see the ratings of the shows that you cited in the study. They weren't included, so I looked them up. They were all TV 14. 7 shows had an L indicator, 13 shows had V, 3 shows had S, 6 shows had D. One of the shows had 3 out of 4 descriptors. I mean, and look, I'm not saying that means it's not right for you, because it obviously is. That just means it's maybe not right for me. And that's the problem with all of this, is people make subjective decisions about what's right for their family and what their children ought and ought not to see. Are the ratings perfect? Absolutely not. If you set your blocking technology to TV 14, though, none of the shows listed in your report would have been viewed.
It, the problem with it, I mean, look at the industry's attempt to rate their own programs. 50-something percent of parents could identify what TVMA meant. But if you set to block TVMA in your VCHIP in your television set, 100% of everything on primetime broadcast television comes through. There were 0%, zero of mature rated programs, including some of the most graphic content we have ever seen at the PTC. If you ask these parents that we've talked to, is everything out there appropriate for a 14-year-old? I don't see how you can possibly say with a straight face that there's any level of accuracy with the rating system.
One thing we haven't touched on that I ask any of you to respond to, and that is, I'm wondering if over the years that Vicki has done this survey, if parents' tolerance for sex and violence has changed, if the threshold is now different, if what could not be accepted 10 years ago is perfectly acceptable today. Vic?
You're damn right it has. there's something called ratings creep that Kim Thompson at Harvard School of Public Health has noted in movies. I think it exists. Just look at what's on television. I mean, I consider myself a fairly moderate person, and I am amazed at the use of words on TV that I never heard when I was growing up, and I would have had my mouth washed out with soap if I had used. And they are becoming commonplace, and I think what happens is, again, a research term that I'll use. It's called desensitization. As people hear things more often, see more violence, see more sex, they are desensitized, and it takes more and more to get a reaction out of them.
And that may
all being desensitized.
And I wonder if that may account in part for the finding related to a parent's concern about their individual child, because the threshold is just lower.
I think it's possible there's a generational change going on. It's possible it's desensitization. It's possible it's just that the younger generation has a different opinion as well. You know, I was going to just comment, though. I think with regard to television, what strikes me from the survey and from the focus groups that we did is where this issue is of most concern is with the tweens. It's not the 15-year-olds and it's not the little kids. With the little kids, parents feel like there's a few networks out there and my kid knows what they are and I tell them they can watch this channel or that channel and it's all going to be kids' shows. By the time the kids are 15, the parents are pretty much, you know, they can watch whatever they want for the most part. They just want to keep them away from the most salacious content on a premium cable channel, for example. But it's the 10, 11, and 12-year-olds where I think there's the most interesting issues. These are kids who are kind of straddling childhood and teenagedom themselves. So when we ask, like, parents, what are their favorite video games? You know, you'd hear Rugrats and Grand Theft Auto. You know, what are their favorite TV shows? Malcolm in the Middle and CSI. You know, and so the kids' tastes are kind of straddling these two worlds. Parents aren't really sure what's appropriate for kids that age. Those are the parents who are most likely to use the V-chip, by the way. It's not the littlest kids, and it's not the older kids, obviously, but it's those parents. Nearly one in four of parents with kids that age will use the V-chip. And a lot of those kids like TV-14 shows. And so it's TV-14 where the issues come in. And the thing is, the TV show can have different content every week. And so the parents are getting a lot of pressure from some of their tweens to watch these TV-14 shows. So many shows that are on in prime time are TV-14. One week it might be borderline okay. The next week it might be really alarming to a parent. If they set their V-chip, they're constantly having to unset it if they want to let them watch that TV-14 show. And so, I mean, I don't know what the solution is, but I think it's important for everybody, especially in the TV industry, to be thinking about that tween audience and some quality programming for them that parents would approve of and that the kids would be interested in.
Thank you. I have two quick questions on slightly different subjects, and then I want to open it up to the audience. Mike Angus, to you, any surprise in the finding that parents were slightly less concerned about their kids' exposure to what's on the Internet than to television? Given all we know about how young kids now are using the new media, did you expect the Internet to be on top?
I didn't expect it, but I'm not surprised after reading the report.
Uh-huh.
And the reason is that I think parents are aware that they need to be more involved and more engaged. I think that there is a sentiment that it is the Wild West out there. The Internet is international, it's global, and there's no effective way, unlike the channels that are coming into your home, you know what's there, it's programmed by the networks. Here they can go anywhere in the world, and the parents are, by nature, going to be more engaged. They're going to be talking to their kids more about it. And, you know, because of that, we need to provide them with the tools. And I think they do understand the need to be educated themselves about how all of it works.
Okay. And to you, Vic, if you can reflect for a moment or two, the question that Vicky talked about towards the end of her presentation, parents link watching TV to kids being overweight, but they don't seem concerned about food advertising on TV. The Academy has called for a ban on junk food advertising. So what do you make of the fact that parents don't seem so concerned?
Well, we have not done a very good job, I think, of educating parents. They still are more concerned about violence, about sex than they are about violence. I found that interesting in your report, Vicky. And they've always been more concerned about sex than they are about violence. Every other Western country knows that media violence is more damaging to kids than sex on TV. Every other country, every piece of research says that. And yet parents are more worried about sex. They're almost as worried about bad language as they are about violence. We have not done a good job of educating parents. The media clearly contribute to obesity. There are about 15 or 20 studies that show that. There's a wonderful study that says if you simply decrease the amount of TV time, you decrease obesity. Just decrease, cut the amount of TV time. The American Academy of Pediatrics says no more than 2 hours a day of entertainment screen time. Kids spend 6 hours a day with all media combined, 3 hours a day with television. We are seeing, in my office, I see obese teenagers and kids every clinic, every week. And it has really gotten to be a problem. We see babies drinking Coca-Cola in bottles, in baby bottles. We've got to do something about this. This is an urgent public health crisis, and it means not advertising junk food to kids, especially kids under the age of 8 who have no intellectual capacity to understand what advertising is all about. The Federal Communications Commission said that 25 years ago.
Questions to the audience. If you could wait to get the mic, stand up, identify yourself and your affiliation so our viewers on the web will know who you are. The gentleman right there in the brown jacket.
Good morning. My name is Doug Levin. I'm with Cable in the Classroom, the Cable Industries Education Foundation. My question really is about Chart 8. We're talking about differences in parent attitudes and behaviors based on the age of their children. Clearly, there's other things going on with parents. Here, Chart 8 is about the racial, ethnic background of families and their different opinions. I'd love some comment from the panel about those differences, maybe why they think they're happening and what the implications of those might be.
I think there needs to be more research on this. What I can tell you is that African-American families are on to something. African-American teenagers are more resistant to cigarette advertising, for example. They smoke at lower rates because of that. There is something we need to study, ethnic differences and racial differences about how families look at TV. And there's something protective in African-American families, and I think you're seeing it in this study, and we've seen it in other studies. And I think it's great. I want to know how to bottle it.
Jim or Tim, do you want to take that on?
To be honest, I don't have a good answer. I'd have to defer to the doctor or to Tim.
Vicki?
Well, I mean, one thing I could speculate is that kids from African-American homes spend a lot more time watching screen media than other kids. And so that may be a reason that there's greater concern on the part of their parents. I don't know.
Who has another question? Yes, the gentleman in the blue shirt. In front.
My name is Dominic Perry. I'm with a group called the Coalition for Independent Ratings, and we bring together a group of organizations that are creating their own ratings outside of the industry, trying to provide a resource. And the study, I don't think, directly asked about parents' interest in independent ratings. I'd be interested to hear any of the panel talk about how open do you think they would be, what role do you see independent ratings potentially playing in this conversation, and perhaps increasing folks' interest in the V-chip if parents are saying they're not that pleased with the TV parental ratings.
Tim, you guys don't provide ratings, independent ratings per se, but you provide a lot of reviews on your website, right?
We do, as an organization, we actually watch every hour of primetime broadcast television programming and a lot of original cable programming, and we record every instance of sex violence, profanity, every advertiser, and we make that information available to the public, hopefully allowing them to make a more informed choice for their families. You can go to TV Guide and see what the plot is, but at the PTC's website, you can see what type of content you're likely to see in that program. Is it independent? Well, I guess it's certainly it's our look on things. We try to be as objective as we possibly can be. We have a very open criteria in terms of how we rate certain words, certain scenes. If death is depicted, is it, how is it depicted and so forth? And we have a simple traffic light, red, yellow, green, for sex, for violence, for profanity, and then overall. I think that, you know, again, anything that the industry can step up and help. I mean, the NRA just helped pass a gun control bill in Congress. I mean, if that's possible, then I believe that the industry can come to this table with Mike and be part of the conversation at a better solution, as opposed to wrapping themselves in the flag and hiding behind what I think is reality here.
Tim, who actually evaluates the shows, and who created the standards?
We have a research staff here in our Virginia office that reviews, that records and monitors everything. They're trained. It is, again, as a powerful database tool with instances, basically any possible depiction of sex or violence or profanity or disrespect for authority or disrespect for religion has been identified as best as we can. I mean, we're always adding new categories of content as they become available. We never had incestuous necrophilia as a topic in our database until a couple of years ago when the FX Network put that on there. So it's as objective as it can, as we know it can possibly be. We're trying to always improve our research. We've actually recently hired a PhD to run our research department, and we're looking forward to his tweaking the system as well.
I was going to ask Dominic, how many different independent rating systems are out there, and do you have any sense of how many parents are using them?
On our website, we try to collect and list every independent organization that we can find that's doing ratings, and right now we've got over a dozen different organizations. Quite honestly, most of them are small. They're fledgling. It's a new industry. We see it as something that's rising as parents begin to look out and try to find other resources, to, precisely as this conversation. How can they supplement? How can they find tools?
Is there anything common from one organization to the next that you've been able to spot?
The one thing I think that at a very broad level, there seems to be an agreement across the rating systems that the three main areas you want to try to get to are profanity, sex, violence, in some form or another. Those seem to be the basic things. What we are hearing more and more, as Vic talked about, smoking is becoming more and more of an issue in things that our groups are hearing. Do you have anything on smoking? Do you have a way to help us filter on that? Those would be the basic areas.
Thank you. A question on this side. The lady in the middle here. Teresa.
Good morning. I'm Angela McElide with the Home Safety Council. To what extent do children understand the ratings? Have any studies been done in this area? It occurs to me that as my children became tweens, they're now older teens, they were watching television by themselves. So is this an opportunity for parents to have discussions with children about what the ratings mean? Do the kids understand it? Can they self-monitor?
Interesting question. Vicki, do you want to take that?
Yeah, we haven't studied that in a long time. We did a number of years ago do a survey of kids about the TV rating system. I can tell you from the focus groups that I do, I think a lot of kids understand them and are aware of them, perhaps even more so than the parents are. I've heard a number of instances of parents saying that their kid tells them, oh, this show is rated such and such, can I watch it, or I probably shouldn't watch it. So I have heard of that happening.
As a parent of teenage boys, I would be concerned that if my kid saw a rating, it would induce them right to want to watch it.
And there is research on movie ratings, and kids definitely know the movie ratings, and if you have an 8-year-old, he or she wants to go to a PG-13 or R-rated movie. I have to say, I go to movies a lot. Every time I go to an R-rated movie, there is a 5-, 6-, 7-year-old. At least several sitting in the audience, and I cannot believe it. I cannot believe it. And I want to know why, and there's no research on that. Why do parents take their kids to movies that are inappropriate for them?
Because of the high cost of babysitting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. A question in the back there.
Stephen Balcom with the Family Online Safety Institute. Earlier, several members of the panel almost yearn for a universal rating system. And in fact, what we're hearing is that there are a dozen, perhaps more, of them out there. So perhaps that's an unattainable holy grail. Perhaps what we're looking for is a universal labeling system. Ratings, after all, are subjective evaluations of content, usually age-based. whereas labeling systems, a bit like the food labeling system, is more of an objective description of content. And you could use that as an underlying sort of framework or a foundation for many different rating systems, because quite frankly, the idea of a universal rating system that works across television, across movies, across games, and the internet seems an unattainable goal. And I just wanted to get your reaction.
Can you give us an example of what you mean by labeling?
Well, my own experience with the ICRA system, which is 46 different categories based in areas to do with nudity, sex, language, violence, but also alcohol, tobacco, gambling, and a various number of things. And basically it says that it either has this kind of partial nudity or it doesn't. It has this kind of profanity or it doesn't. It has an on-off kind of radio button selection. And it is an attempt at being a taxonomy, if you will, an objective description of content without any subjective overlay as to whether or not it's appropriate for a certain age range. And the reason, sorry, last point about that, the reason is that it has to work internationally. We developed the system for the use on the internet because the French consideration about nudity, for instance, is very different from the what it is here.
Jim, do you want to respond to that, react to it?
Not really, but I don't know if I'm smart enough to follow the guy. Maybe universal ratings are a little over my pay grade. But, you know, I do think there seems to be a consensus that on the panel, maybe, and from some of the questions of the audience, that the ratings, current rating system is not useful. Or is deceiving, I have a different take on that.
Excuse me, Jackie. I just wanted to say that we've just been joined by Commissioner Deborah Tate from the Federal Communications Commission, and she wanted to come up and share a few thoughts with us.
Excellent. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you all so much. I'm sorry that I couldn't be part of the panel. I was actually mentoring young women this morning. So I'm glad to see so many of you all here. And again, I just want to thank Kaiser for the significant part that you play both in Washington and across the country, as we've talked about before. And even though I think everybody expressed their desire not to have the government involved and regulate in this area, I share that same belief. We would hope that the voluntary efforts of the industry would come forward and would move us faster and more quickly to try to resolve some of these problems. I do think it's interesting that no matter what the statistics are, this is the number one issue that when I go home or when I'm on the road at the grocery store working out, running, that people stop and talk with me about, kind of under the whole purview of positive programming, if you will. One of the things that I wanted to comment on, because I did look at it and I thought it was just fabulous, that 4 in 10, 41%, and this is one of the highest statistics actually, that parents are using the controls to block access to websites. And I think that's so important as we move forward, because as you all know, our kids and certainly the next generation, it's all going to be a screen, no matter if it's this big in their hand or it's that size screen. So I think that is something that is really good news that is in this report. I guess the other thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about, and somebody mentioned the international, whether it is in advertising, where Britain just banned advertising to children, or in Brazil where they banned trans fats, which also brings up childhood obesity, I think that we here in America want the industry and parents, groups like Kaiser and all of those that you all represent here, to come together. And that's why we've been working so hard with our task force on childhood obesity, as just one more example of how we have to work together. I applaud all of you all who are here. I've said before that I hope we'll get to more balanced messaging. And again, I think that it is really helpful to have scientific research. It's really helpful to have statistics. But I think that we all recognize that there are some problems, and all those of us here working together can help try and solve those problems. So I thank all of you all for your efforts. I look forward to working with each of you all in the future, as well as those of you who all are are here today. And thank you again for the passion that you have for children, be they young children, tweens, or teens. So thank you all.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who wants to respond to what Commissioner Tate said or follow up with a question? Yes, gentleman up here.
Robert Keston, Center for Screen Time Awareness. Basically, what the commissioner just said is very nice. I serve on the task force, but the reality is that research has been done in all the countries that have now banned advertising to children, Canada, UK, Scandinavian countries, and they've done a lot of this research, and they know that balanced messaging doesn't work and all this other stuff doesn't work. And the reality is that we put too much pressure on parents, and then, again, not enough pressure on parents to do what's right. Not everybody has to be a parent. Not everybody should be a parent. And the reality is that that's tough. But our government always looks for Band-Aids rather than real solutions. So we're going to end up with a task force that only comes part of the way, and then a government that only comes part of the way, and nobody's going to accomplish anything. And the industry can do an awful lot more. MySpace may be doing a lot, but I get all these emails from people on MySpace who say, go to my website where I can be completely naked because MySpace won't let me do that. And that's going to every single kid out there. So there's needs to be a lot more done in places that promote themselves as meeting grounds for children. There's just way, way too much accessibility. In Germany, middle schoolers were downloading snuff films on their cell phones. That's not broadcast. That's not anything. As the commissioner said, it's about the screen. And really the only way to deal with this is to limit screen time, because the less exposure is better. And if you're not going to get the healthy educational content, you're better off really knowing to turn it off. And that's really the responsibility of all of us, helping us to understand how to use the technology rather than letting the technology use us.
Commissioner, do you want to respond or comment, follow up?
I'm a lot more optimistic.
Come on in. Come on in.
I mean, I hope the task force will make some difference, and I hope that this will just be a starting point. This week, I think most everybody saw the announcement by Kellogg about both their nutritional standards and their advertising. So we hope that the rest of the industry will continue to take efforts like that. You know, I think that it is always a balance, and it's a tough balance. I mean, we have 10 million obese children or teens in this country. It's a national health epidemic. So I think every one of you who represents any group can do something. I spoke with the pediatricians last week about becoming more involved on Capitol Hill. Obviously, Congress has become very involved in both the obesity issue and the violence issue. And I don't want to leave anyone under the impression at all that we're not going to enforce the law. You know, we have laws that Congress passed in certain authority, and in fact, we will be revisiting some of the issues that were part of the Children's TV settlement that also move us over talking about screen time and all the different screens that children see, whether it's violent program or advertising for unhealthy food. So I'm pressing onward. I'm more optimistic. But thank you for your comments.
Vicki?
Yeah, I had a question actually for Mike. But
I think he wanted to get in there, actually. Go ahead, Mike.
If I could take that with two, I think that limiting screen time is a parental decision, as I assume you advocate. I think that one of the things we're missing is the positive things that television and the internet can provide. And 59% in the study said that the internet was overall a positive experience for them. There are a lot of positive things on the internet and on MySpace. For these age groups that we're talking about, the 14s, that's an important developmental point in their lives. Mm-hmm. And like it or not, many parents are no longer comfortable allowing their kids to go to the pizza parlors, the skating rinks, the malls by themselves. And they find themselves unable to really engage in that one-on-one peer communication, which is essential to development at that age. And the social networking aspect of MySpace and other sites really has served to replace that for many kids. This is where they find their voice. This is where they talk to people and express themselves. Finding new music, of course, but it's also engaging in political dialogue. It's participating in our impact channels for social causes and things like that. And just more broadly speaking, you made a comment about the content that's available. That is one of the things that is of great concern to us. We don't want those kinds of things, pornography, links to it on our site. When we find them, we delete them. We have links on all of our pages for people to report inappropriate content. In addition, we provide a lot of safety features specifically designed for the younger users. 14 and 15-year-olds who use the site are automatically private profiles. No one else can see them unless they're a friend, and that can't be changed. Now, if you're 16 or 17, you can change that from private to public. But again, that's part of the dialogue with the parents, and that's a decision that each parent makes with their child at the appropriate time. What's appropriate for my 14-year-old may not be appropriate for your 14-year-old.
My question was going to be, the thing that surprised me the most in this survey, I think, was were the findings about the monitoring of the Internet and how confident parents felt about their ability to know what their kids were doing online, because I really did have the idea that they felt like they were just kind of in the dark. And so to see that more than 8 in 10 parents whose kids use social networking sites say they've read their profile and they know what a buddy list is and they've checked the buddy list and they in the focus groups, they really seem to be aware of, yes, I know who this kid is who's on my kid's buddy list and so on and so forth. And I was just wondering, in terms of any research you guys have done, does this track with what you find in terms of parent involvement, or are kids pulling the wool over their parents' eyes in this way, or is there something more you would suggest parents should do that they might not be doing?
Well, I don't think, I guess to go back to one of the points someone made earlier, you know, can we kind of do that and say we're done now? I think the answer to that is clearly no. This is an ongoing process. It's an evolving process. As the media changes and as our kids' interaction with that media changes, we have to change the tools that we're providing to parents. And the parents have to, in turn, change their level of engagement and involvement and communication. The most important thing, again, for us is to educate the parents, let them know what's out there, whether it's about the V-chip and how to use it properly, or about the Internet and our Zephyr tool that's coming out and how to use that.
I think we have time for one more question from the audience, this lady here, and then I'll turn to Vicki for a final thought.
Hi, Alice Kahn, Cartoon Network. I was really interested in this last conversation, Vicki, because what we've been looking at is the intergenerational nature of media use. The intergenerational nature of media use. If you look at some of the research that Dorothy and Jerome Singer did at the Yale Child Study Center, when they looked at the value of intergenerational play, what we know about parents' use of media with their kids is if you sit next to your child and watch the television program or play the video game, they get more out of it. Whether you have a conversation about it or not, it's the value of your time with your child. I'd love to see the next round of Kaiser research really look into this nature of intergenerational media use, especially around video gaming. I mean, Victor, you brought it up. Mike, you've brought it up. We've been looking at, we've got a generation of parents now who grew up as gamers, who are now playing games with their kids. That's very different than 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So this has been a terrific conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Vicki, or did one of you want to respond?
Yeah, I agree. The problem is that, for example, with TV, Annenberg has some research that only 25% of parents co-view with television. I can tell you it's incredibly pro-social. When my son was smaller, I wanted to read the C.S. Lewis Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe series to him. He said, no way, no how. We watched a video, one-hour video of Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe. We read all, I don't know, six or seven books after that. There are amazing pro-social aspects to media, and we have not done a good job of telling parents that they need to co-view, that it is a kind of sex education. It is a kind of anti-violence education. If you're sitting with your child and you see something violent, you say, well, what do you think of that? Is there another way to resolve that problem besides a fist fight or a shootout? That parents trump media.
You know, in response to that, Alice, I think, you know, when it comes to television, there's been this trend toward, I guess, the nicheification, if you will, of programming that has some pluses and some minuses. The pluses might be that there's more content that's appropriate for different specific age groups of kids. The minus is that everybody's in their own room watching their own programming. And, I mean, I think like something like 60% of households have three or more television sets. And I think the reality is that when it comes to television, viewing is splintering, not coming together. The internet, obviously, it's a lot harder to do together, and I don't think that's something that happens a lot. With mobile media, that's something where it's the personalization of media use and the privatization of media use, which does make parental monitoring more challenging. There's some, you know, cozying up together to watch television together once a week. There's when co-viewing takes place, in my experience, it's been more likely to be the TV 14 show that the parent wants to watch, and they kind of say, well, my kid is bugging me. They want to hang out with me. I'm going to stretch the rules and let them watch this program with me because I really don't want to miss Grey's Anatomy or Desperate Housewives or whatever it is today. Where I think it's most interesting is with the video games. And I think you're really right that could, because that, I mean, it's inherently a two-person activity. This generation of parents have grown up with video games, and something I've heard a lot in the focus groups is that is a way for dads and kids to socialize together. And I hear a lot of moms say that's the positive thing I see in the video games is it really provides an activity for my husband to do with my kids together, and they really relate on it. So for better or worse, that's, I think, one role that media are playing. I basically just want to thank all of the panelists for an engaging and lively conversation. Thank Jackie for an excellent job moderating, and thank all of you for coming today. Thanks.